You're home here at the O'Day Pod. We simply sit with God's amazing word, unpack it in everyday language, discover what it looks like to walk it out every day, and then surround it with amazing music. Like a warm hug from heaven, wherever this finds you, rushing to work, prepping dinner, or finally chilling out. My hope is that God's word meets you in that exact moment, just as you are. And now let's head into today's deep dive.
Welcome to today's deep dive. I'm your host, and as always, I am joined by our resident expert. And we have a pretty fascinating topic today.
We really do. Thanks for having me. Yeah. I'm excited to get into this one.
Yeah. So I want you to imagine finding a roadmap, but this isn't a map of highways or hiking trails or even a subway system.
Right.
It's a map made entirely of ancient poetry. And instead of just covering a few miles, it claims to cover thousands of years of human history.
It's a massive scope.
It really is. It starts by zooming in on this dusty, totally overlooked village. Then it pulls back to reveal this global tragedy of people being scattered like seeds in the wind.
And then it finally zooms back in to a promise of ultimate unbreakable security.
Exactly. I mean, it sounds like a movie script. But for this deep dive, we're looking at a text that claims to be exactly that. A literal roadmap written centuries before the events actually took place.
It is a fascinating juxtaposition. We are looking at just three verses of text today, but the implications, well, they are massive.
Yeah.
We're diving into the Old Testament prophecy of Micah, specifically chapter 5, verses 2 through 4. And what's really compelling about the stack of sources we have today is that they approach this ancient text from two very different angles.
Right. So we have this incredibly detailed theological blog post that breaks down the original Hebrew context, the geography, the history. It is very analytical, very, you know, left brain.
Mm-hmm.
But then to balance that out, we have this really emotive, lyrical YouTube video that takes those same ancient words and turns them into a narrative about human longing.
And that balance is so crucial. Because when you study prophecy, it is really easy to get lost in the dates and the maps.
Which we will discuss, by the way, because they are important.
Of course.
Right.
But you can miss the actual heartbeat of it if you aren't careful. So the mission for this deep dive is to unpack this specific three-part prediction regarding a shepherd king.
Right.
We need to understand the selection of an unlikely birthplace, this mysterious and somewhat dark period of scattering, and finally, the promise of security.
And I just have to say, the specificity here is wild to me, because usually when you read horoscopes or vague predictions, they say things like, you will face a challenge soon, or a leader will rise from the people.
Right. They leave it open to interpretation.
Exactly. But this text names a specific town. It doesn't just say a small place. It says Bethlehem Ephrathah.
Precisely. And that's exactly where we have to start. The text opens with the phrase, but you, O Bethlehem Ephrathah. It's a direct address. It isn't talking about the town. It is talking to the town.
Wow, yeah.
But as you dig into the blog source, you realize this isn't a compliment about how great the town is. In fact, it is the exact opposite.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the blab source points out a really specific detail that I had not realized before. It says Bethlehem was too little to be among the clans of Judah.
Yeah.
And I thought Bethlehem was famous. I mean, everyone knows the name now, right?
Everyone knows it now because of this prophecy and its fulfillment.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was completely insignificant.
Insignificant how?
Well, the source notes that in the tribal system of Israel back then, families were grouped into clans. Or in Hebrew, the word is yelef.
Yelefeth, okay.
To be a clan meant you had enough population and resources to contribute a distinct regiment of soldiers to the national army. You had a political voice.
Oh, I see.
But Bethlehem was so small, it didn't even meet the threshold to count as a clan. It was essentially a zero on the political scale.
That's wild. So it's like a town that isn't even big enough to have its own post office or a mayor.
Exactly.
And the geography note from the source really drove this home for me. It mentions it is only 8 kilometers south of Jerusalem.
Right. Which is about 5 miles.
5 miles. So you have Jerusalem, the capital, the absolute center of power. That's where the king lives. That's where the armies are garrisoned. That's where the entire economy is.
Mm.
And less than a 10-minute drive away, in modern terms, you have this tiny, completely irrelevant village. Why not just have the ruler come from the capital? Wouldn't that make way more sense if you're trying to establish authority?
If you are thinking like a human political strategist, absolutely. You launch your campaign from the capital. You want the optics of power.
Right.
But this is where the expert commentary in our source material highlights a recurring theme. and that is divine glory. The source explains that God often chooses the small and the overlooked to display his glory. It creates this deliberate contrast.
A contrast between the vessel and the treasure.
Exactly. Because think about it, if the ruler comes from Jerusalem, from the palace, you just assume it's the natural progression of a human dynasty, power begetting power.
The machine just keeps turning.
Right. But if the eternal ruler, as the text calls him, comes from a place that doesn't even have a seat at the political table, then the glory belongs entirely to the one who sent him, not the place he came from.
It's like finding a diamond in a pile of mud, right? Versus finding one in a pristine jewelry store. The context makes the diamond shine so much brighter.
That is a great analogy. There's also a historical connection here that the blog pointed out. It mentioned that Bethlehem was David's city.
Right, King David was born there.
But remember, David started as a shepherd. He was the youngest of his brothers, the one left out in the field while all the important business was happening. So by going back to Bethlehem, the prophecy is essentially resetting the clock.
Oh, I like that. Resetting the clock.
It's bypassing the corrupt kings sitting on the throne in Jerusalem at that time and saying, we're going to start over. The system is broken, so we're going back to the roots. A greater David is coming.
You know, there was one other detail in the source regarding the economy of the town that honestly gave me chills. It mentioned something about lands.
Ah, yes. This is a brilliant detail that connects the geography directly to the theology.
Yeah, explain that for us.
So the source notes that Bethlehem wasn't just a random village. Because of its proximity to Jerusalem, that short 5-mile distance we mentioned, it was historically the area where lambs were raised specifically for the temple sacrifices.
So the town known for raising sacrificial lambs is the birthplace of the ruler.
Exactly. It completely foreshadows the concept of the Lamb of God. It is a layer of symbolism that would have resonated so deeply with an ancient audience.
Wow.
But there is a massive paradox here. He is born in this tiny dusty village, yet the text says his coming forth is from of old, from ancient days.
And the YouTube source had a beautiful line for that. It called him the ancient child whose goings out were before all days. That is such a mind-bending concept, someone stepping into time who existed before time.
It really is. The log source emphasizes that this isn't just a new king being created.
Mm.
He enters into time, yes, but his origin is eternal.
Right.
So you have the infinite literally squeezing itself into the too little village of Bethlehem. It's the ultimate subversion of expectations.
But just as you think this is going to be a happy story about a new king arriving and fixing everything immediately, the roadmap takes a really sharp turn.
It does.
We move to verse 3, and the tone changes completely. The text says, therefore he shall give them up.
This is the transition to the second part of our deep dive, the scattering. And you are right, it is a very dark turn.
Give them up. That just sounds so final. It sounds like abandonment.
It feels that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But we really need to clarify what the source means here.
Right, because that could be easily misunderstood.
Exactly. For you listening, if you're new to this kind of language, the expert analysis in the blog describes this as divine discipline. It is crucial to distinguish this from simple abandonment.
So it's not just God walking away.
No, it's not that God walked away and lost their address. It's that because the ruler, this shepherd king, was rejected, there was a consequence.
So it's cause and effect, like a parent saying, if you do this, there is a timeout.
Similar, but obviously on a massive national scale. The source explains that giving them up refers to a handing over to enemies as a form of discipline.
And it lists some specific historical examples, right?
Yes. It lists a specific historical progression. The Assyrian captivity, the Babylonian captivity, and then extending all the way into the Roman dispersion, which is often called the diaspora.
The diaspora, that's the technical term for the scattering of the Jewish people away from their homeland.
Correct. And the blog source is very clinical about this. It calls it a long season of scattering and hardship. It views it entirely through the lens of history and theology. It answers the why.
And this is exactly where I think the audio source, that YouTube video, adds so much value.
How so?
Because reading long season scattering is one thing. That's data. But hearing the lyrics, it just hits different. It tells you the what and the how it actually felt for those people.
What stood out to you in the lyrics specifically?
There is this one line, scattered sons across the earth, names in strange tongues. It captures the sheer identity crisis of it. You aren't just living somewhere else. Your very name is changing because you are in a foreign land.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And then it says, carried far like seeds in wind.
That image of seeds in the wind is so powerful. it implies a total lack of agency.
Yeah, you don't get to choose.
Right, you don't choose where you go. The wind blows and you land where you land. It speaks to a profound loss of control.
And the physical toll, too. The song mentions silent tears stretched long and thin, and this is the one that really got me. The same old ache in their bones.
That is a profound contrast to the clinical blog post. The blog provides the reason for the scattering, right? The rejection of the king, the need for discipline.
Mm-hmm.
But the audio source captures the ache of that discipline. It's not just a timeline on a history chart. It is generations of people feeling that ache in their bones, just waiting for something to change.
But the text says there is a limit. The blog source mentions that this isn't the end of the story. It says this lasts until the time when she who is in labor has given birth.
Right. It is a temporary season, even if it lasts for centuries. The goal of divine discipline, according to the source, isn't destruction.
It's restoration.
Exactly. It is like labor pains, excruciating, yes, but leading to life. The text promises that the rest of his brother shall return. So you have this picture of a family that has been broken apart, waiting for the exact moment they could be put back together.
And that leads us perfectly to the third stop on this roadmap. We have had the humble birth, the painful scattering, and now the return. Verse 4 says, "And he shall stand and shepherd his flock."
This is the great shift. The shepherd king finally takes his place.
What's interesting to me is the verb used there, stand. It feels very active.
It's incredibly active. But look at the source of his power. This is crucial for understanding the theology here. The text says he stands in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God.
So he is not just a guy with a big army and a lot of charisma.
No. And that is the fundamental difference between this prophecy and your standard political revolution. A typical king stands in his own strength, his wealth, his chariots, his political alliances. This shepherd stands in the strength of God. The expert commentary points out that this implies a vigilant, deeply personal care. It circles right back to that Davidic imagery we talked about.
Because David was a shepherd before he was a king.
Exactly. He fought off bears and lions to protect sheep.
So this ruler is applying that exact same level of protective intensity, but on a national, even global scale.
Precisely. And the result of that standing and shepherding is the promise we touched on at the very beginning. And they shall dwell secure.
Dwell secure. You know, in the world we live in today, true security feels like a fantasy.
It really does.
We have alarm systems, we have passwords, we have militaries. But do we ever actually feel 100% secure?
That is the big aha moment here. The source argues that real security, unbreakable security, isn't about walls or treaties. It hinges entirely on the relationship with the shepherd.
Oh, wow.
The blog explicitly states that the future security of Israel hinges on the day the nation finally receives this shepherd king.
So you simply cannot have the security without the shepherd.
Right. You can't outsource the security to a political system. It's personal. And the scope is massive. The text says, "He shall be great to the ends of the earth."
Which connects all the way back to that little town of Bethlehem. We started with a town too small to even be a clan, and we end with greatness reaching the ends of the earth.
It is a complete inversion of human expectation. The too little becomes the infinite. The scattered seeds become the gathered flock. And the deep insecurity of exile is finally replaced by the security of the shepherd.
Okay, so let's try to synthesize all of this. For you listening, maybe you were hearing about Micah or Old Testament prophecy for the very first time. If we had to distill this deep dive into three key takeaways for a beginner based on these sources, what would they be?
That's a great question. If you are looking at this roadmap for the first time, here are the three major landmarks to watch for.
Okay, lay them out for us.
First is the precision of prophecy. This isn't vague guesswork. The source material shows us that centuries before the event, a specific tiny village was pinpointed. It tells us that this book claims to know the end from the very beginning. It puts its credibility on the line with highly specific geography.
It is the difference between saying someone will visit you and saying Mike will knock on your door at 4 p.m.
Exactly. It's that specific. Second is the purpose in hardship.
This is the tough one.
It is. The scattering or the exile wasn't just an accident of history. It wasn't that God somehow lost control of the situation. The source frames it as divine discipline.
A consequence.
Yes, a consequence intended to lead to a return. It reframes suffering not as meaningless chaos, but as a painful chapter in a much larger story of restoration.
And that really helps make sense of the ache in the bones part from the song. It's not for nothing. There is a purpose.
Right. And the third takeaway is the nature of leadership. The ultimate hero in this text isn't a tyrant. He isn't a warlord.
He is a shepherd.
He's a shepherd.
Uh-huh.
He provides security not by oppressing his people, but by standing in the strength of God to actively protect them. It completely redefines what true power looks like.
I love that. It's not power over people, it's power for people.
Beautifully put.
Before we wrap up, I want to go back to that audio source one last time. There was a phrase in there that really stuck with me. Old words burning bright on the scroll of the heart.
That is a lovely image.
It makes you think about the tension we have been discussing today. We have ancient days and we have now. We have a prophecy about a birth in Bethlehem that happened literally. We have a prophecy about a scattering that happened literally. I mean, we have the history books to prove it.
We do.
So here is the provocative thought for you listening right now. If the first two parts of this roadmap were literal, the specific town, the specific suffering, what does that imply about the third part?
The promise of security.
Exactly. The source says this security is still unfolding, that it reaches to the ends of the earth. If the map has been perfectly accurate so far, the destination must be real too.
It raises a profound question. Are we currently living in the scattering, or are we actively moving toward the gathering?
And for you listening, maybe look for the small places in your own life today, the Bethlehems, the places that feel too little to matter. Because if this deep dive has taught us anything, it is that the biggest things often start in the absolute smallest places. Thanks for diving in with us.
It has been a pleasure.
We will catch you on the next one.
Thank you for being part of the O'Day Pod family today. I pray that God's word and our discussion have left you feeling truly enlightened. We'd love to see you again next episode. Until then, here's the featured song from today's show.
Dust on stone, yet from your streets the firstborn steps into time. Before the hills, before the stars, ancient child whose goings out were before all days. He walks in heartbeats cry.
Children chanting softly underneath, born in Bethlehem, everlasting King, everlasting King. Ancient child, eternal King, from days of old you enter.
Scattered suns across the earth, names in strange tongues, same old ache in their bones, carry far like seeds in wind, holding stories of a throne they've never seen. Silent tears stretch long and thin, yet every road still bends toward him. is once veiled begin to clear. Old words burn bright on the scroll of the heart. Pierced hands shown to wandering flocks. Bone of our bone, you were ours from the start. Lost and found, returning home. Shepherd of Jacob, standing strong in our King.